Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Bio is our monthly book series when, for a week, we have an in-depth discussion of a deeply researched biography to get a full understanding of the subject. This week, our conversation is about one of the most powerful people in fashion in the media, Anna Wintour. Wintour is currently Chief Content Officer for Condé Nast. She's also Editor-in-Chief of Vogue, a position she's held since 1988. At the height of Vogue's popularity, under Wintour's leadership, 1 in 10 American women would get a copy of its famous September fall issue. Odell interviewed more than 250 people on and off the record to learn more about the life story of a woman who engenders deep loyalty from some and disdain from others. She can make or break careers, has an unparalleled work ethic, has put up with a lot of sexism, but for years has had a spotty track record on diversity and inclusion on all levels, race, body size, and class. But before Anna became a creative director or an editor-in-chief, she started as an assistant. Her last name, Wintour, was known because of her father's media career, and her financial privilege created opportunities for a young woman with an interest in fashion. However, it was her own drive that quickly propelled her from an entry-level position at a British magazine called Harper's and Queen. As one coworker told Amy Odell, quote, Anna really had no qualms about being completely focused and to the point of being very abrupt, seemingly rude to people because she just didn't have time. She was just on her path to what she needed to do, period, the end. In an office, people kind of clown around, they take breaks and they gossip. She never did any of that. She wasn't in it for fun and games. She was in it to work. And she took every opportunity she could to advance, even if that meant working for a less than high-end publisher. Here's the beginning of today's full bio conversation about Anna, the biography, with Amy Odell.
Can you describe Anna's first big break, how she got into the industry?
Anna's first staff magazine job was at a magazine called Harper's and Queen in London. And it was kind of a society magazine, maybe something like Town and Country Today. That covered fashion. And she was a fashion assistant. And she got the job really because the editor-in-chief knew her last name, Wintour. He knew about Charles Wintour. He knew Charles Wintour. He had a lot of respect for him. And he knew that the journalists who worked for Charles Wintour at the Evening Standard also had a lot of respect for him. So he felt like that was as good a reason as any to give Anna a break, which is not to say that she didn't know a lot about fashion. She had been paying a lot of attention to fashion. She, at the time, you know, according to all my sources, was very passionate about fashion. And she was single-mindedly, from this very young age, around 20 when she got this job, driving toward becoming editor-in-chief of American Vogue.
She always knew she wanted that as a job.
She did. And she has said that she got that idea from her father when she was filling out a form. And she's told the story different ways over the years, but she says she was filling out a form and she can't remember what it was for, but it said career ambitions. And she asked her dad, how should I fill this out? And he said, well, write that you want to be editor-in-chief of American Vogue, of course. And from that moment, she never looked back.
You write in the book, of all the entry-level jobs Anna could have held in fashion or media, there was perhaps none she was better suited for than this one at Harper's and Queen. Why was this such a good fit for her?
So being a fashion assistant to a fashion editor means working on photo shoots. It means being a visual editor. And this is something that's very important to understand about Anna. She's a visual editor. That's her bread and butter. She's primarily editing a magazine for the visuals, which is not to say she doesn't edit the text. But when you're working on a photo shoot, it's really about a lot of things, but especially at the assistant level, it's about details. It's about being responsible. It's about not letting things slip through the cracks, not losing jewelry, not being late. All the things that she has been really good at just over the course of her life and taken seriously over the course of her life.
One of the interesting notes there, though, and this that you write about in the book, is that some people thought she overdressed for the position.
How so? Yes.
So Anna later admitted that she would overdress because she would buy these like printed, full printed outfits by, let's say, Missoni or Bill Gibb is a designer that was popular then, and wear a full look to the office. And she would also, she's so well known for her hair and her sunglasses. She had the bob and she had the sunglasses even back then.
I wanted to ask about the sunglasses and the heavy bangs because that has always been part of her look. The sunglasses anyway, the bangs come and go. Is she someone who is an introvert? Was she hiding? Is she mercurial? Is it a uniform? I'm curious about that look.
Yeah, people have said all of the things that you just said. People have thought that she was hiding. So the sunglasses are a prescription. So they're to help her see. She does not have great vision. That was something that her father had also. He did not have great vision. And people have believed that Anna just prefers the look of sunglasses to regular glasses. And the hair, you know, now, meaning in this year, in 2022, that hair might be kind of unusual, but in London at the time, it was a big trend. And a lot of young women in London had that haircut. It wasn't distinguishing for the time and place at which she got it. The unusual thing is that she has kept it for so, so long. And we've seen her, you know, if you look at photos of her over the years, you see that she's tried different things with her fashion. You know, she's worn leopard pants and blazers, something you would not see her in today. But she has not really experimented so much with her hair.
She also has a very reserved demeanor. How is she able to use it to her advantage when she first started out? And I know later on in her career it becomes an advantage, but when you're a young person trying to make it and you're Anna Wintour and you're relatively reserved and quiet, how did that work out for her at Harper's?
You know, if you think about an office, silence can be empowering. She wasn't running around gossiping about what was going on. She was really there to do her work and she was very focused on it and that was it. And then she would leave. This could be frustrating to people, for instance, really over the course of her career. But back then, photographers would come in and show their portfolios. This is a common thing that happens at fashion magazines. Photographer comes in, shows the fashion editor their portfolio, and then they decide if they want to work together. Photographers would come in and Anna would look at their portfolios and she would just say, no, thank you, and close the book. And that would be that. There would be no explanation. So that kind of thing could be frustrating, but ultimately, she was never going to get bogged down in gossip, in sort of petty office matters that a lot of people, you know, just by human nature, get bogged down in.
She was at the job and she made a discovery, which was important to her long-term career, that she really didn't want to be in the field as much on fashion shoots, that she really wanted to be the one making decisions, that that was her goal. That's what she wanted to work towards. And it's interesting because her father, being her dad and who he was, tried to intervene and it backfired. What happened and what did she learn from that situation?
Yeah, so while Anna was at Harper's and Queen, the fashion editor above her named Jennifer Hawking was dismissed. And Anna believed that she should have that job. And in fact, the woman who was assisting Anna at the time believed that she should have that job too. It's not really crazy if you think about it, you know, if you've been at a job for a few years to then expect to get a promotion. However, the editor-in-chief did not give Anna a promotion. He instead decided to bring in a different editor. Anna was very unhappy about this, and she made the editor's job very difficult. And she ultimately decided to leave and move to New York over this, taking her assistant with her. Such was her assistant's loyalty that when Anna said, I'm leaving because they haven't made me the fashion editor, aren't you going to leave too? The assistant said, yeah, okay. And she quit.
Did she come to New York with any specific job in mind? She wasn't yet ready to be editor-in-chief of Vogue, no matter how much you wanted it at that point in your life. She's still a very young woman.
Yeah, so Anna did have a number of advantages at this point in her life. She, when her grandfather on her mother's side died, he left behind a trust that was distributed amongst his kids and grandkids. And so Anna would periodically receive pretty large sums of money. It wasn't so much money that she never would have to work again, but it was enough money that she could afford to not have a job for a little while, that she could afford to move overseas. And remember, her mother being American, she would have been able to do that. It wasn't like she would struggle to get a visa or something like that. So she went to New York. She didn't have a job lined up. She did some freelance work for American Vogue. And then she eventually landed a staff job at Vogue's biggest competitor, Harper's Bazaar.
You write that New York made her feel more ambitious. What did she experience here that led her to this feeling?
So what people described was a cultural difference, really, between work styles in London and work styles in New York in general, but also at magazines. There wasn't quite as much urgency around fashion magazines in general in the office in London at the time. Whereas in America, you know, the staffs were bigger, the budgets were bigger. It was just a bigger business and therefore sort of had to operate more like a very well-oiled machine. And that is how Anna likes to operate. You know, she likes to be busy. She likes to always be driving towards something. There was just not really a sense that, you know, at Harper's Bazaar, at Vogue, you would be languishing, which is the sense that I think people had about a lot of magazines in London at that time.
My guest is Amy O'Dell. The name of the book is Anna, the Biography. It is a biography of Anna Wintour. It is our choice for Full Bio this month. Okay, so this part of the book was fascinating to me, truly. I never knew this story, that her really big break in America, where she really got to be edgy and try things, was at Viva. Now, Viva was a publication founded by Bob Guccione, as in Penthouse Bob Guccione. How did Anna Wintour end up in a job at Viva?
Yeah, that is one of my favorite parts of the book, actually. But she was fired from Harper's Bazaar in what she described as an important learning experience for her. So Harper's Bazaar had a very specific all American aesthetic. They had a formula that they felt worked and they didn't want to deviate from it. And over in London, fashion magazines could be very, very edgy. And you see that today, really, the difference between European fashion magazines and American fashion magazines. European fashion magazines have always had more leeway to be a little bit edgier, whereas here in New York and in America, the focus has kind of generally been on American sportswear for decades. And that's what Harper's Bazaar wanted to do. And Anna didn't come from that environment. And she was, you know, really young. She was in her mid-20s, around 25 when she started at Bazaar, really creative. And she also didn't really want to take the direction that the editor-in-chief was giving her. She wanted to do the thing that she wanted to do. And she was actually fired, she has said, for a photo shoot where, now she has described in interviews a model wearing dreadlocks, and someone I interviewed who worked at Bazaar at the time remembered it being more like Bo Derek braids. So regardless, she made a choice about the model's hair that the editor-in-chief did not like, and he kind of said this is the last straw, and he fired her. But that was a really important experience for her because she had to learn how to fit into American corporate fashion magazines. Now, when she landed at Viva, it wasn't really that desirable of a job on the face of it because the magazine was exiting a period where it published full frontal male nudity. It was trying to be like another Playgirl, only it wasn't reaching the desired audience. And executives who worked at the magazine at the time said that they were reaching gay men, but not women, and their target audience was women. So they decided to phase out the nudity. They did not want to be seen as a pornographic magazine. And as part of phasing out the nudity, they wanted to take the fashion in a more serious and more robust direction that would appeal to advertisers, which is very important for a magazine like Viva. And Anna Wintour was brought on to help do that. And Diane Keaton, who was dating Bob Guccione at the time, was basically Anna's boss. And she, a lot of people sort of described her as learning on the job. It wasn't like she kind of knew what she was doing. Her background was as a dancer. So Anna is said to have kind of resented that. But the result was that she got more freedom to be creative and kind of do what she wanted to do. And it was fascinating to look back at the Viva archive and see this kind of very specific style of photo shoot that I so strongly associate with American Vogue, and I think many people would strongly associate with American Vogue, kind of emerge in her work when she was at Viva.
Yeah, there were ups and downs creatively, but she did get to express that edgier side and that sort of more creative side. What were some of her memorable choices when she was at Viva?
When Anna was at Viva, she got to work with Helmut Newton, the very famous fashion photographer, and they did some really intriguing and edgy fashion spreads together. She did some work with Arthur Elgort, who became a very, very famous fashion photographer. They went to the Caribbean and they did shoots there. And you can see, you know, one of the editors at the time said that like sometimes Anna's shoots would come back and she would think that they were ridiculous. And you can kind of see that, like you can kind of see that she's trying things. She's doing these really big spreads. She has a lot of pages, but the polish isn't always there. And you just see that these photo shoots get stronger and more polished and develop more of a kind of a stronger aesthetic over the course of Anna's tenure there.
It's really fun to go look them up. There's several on eBay that you can buy, and you can see the fashion spreads, and you can kind of see the seeds of what will become sort of the Wintour look in Vogue. You're absolutely right. She did not want to use certain models who had been centerfolds. How did this play out?
Yeah, so many publishing companies do worry about budgets, and Bob Guccione and Kathy Keaton worried about their budgets. And one way that they tried to save money on Viva, which was not a business success from the beginning and never really was by using these women that they had on retainer as staff models. So these were women who might appear in Penthouse, Viva's sister publication. And then Kathy Keaton would want them to serve as fashion models in Anna's editorials. Well, Anna is famously controlling, and she would have liked to pick out her own models. She would have liked to just go to a fashion agency, maybe it would have been Ford or somewhere else, and pick girls who she thought looked really fashionable and stylish. But instead, she was pushed again and again to use the women who were on staff, quite often doing nude centerfold work for Bob Guccione for Penthouse.
When did she leave Viva?
Viva folded in 1978, and it was sudden, and Anna was very upset about it. She was crying when it was announced in the office. And after that, you know, that was the second job that she had had in New York, and the second job that she had had in New York that had not worked out, that had ended in this really bad way. She had been fired from Harper's Bazaar, and then here she was at Viva. The magazine was folding. And then after that, she took a little break from magazines.
You were listening to my conversation with Amy Odell about Anna, the biography. We'll continue our conversation about Anna Wintour's professional breakthrough. It happened at New York Magazine.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. For this month's full bio, we are discussing Anna, the biography by Amy Odell. It's about one of the most powerful people in media and fashion, Anna Wintour. Anna became publishing famous not at a glossy beauty magazine, but at New York Magazine in the early 80s, during a time when its floors were populated with grizzled writers like Pete Hamill, full of journalists who one day, as Odell described it, looked up to see a mystical and ethereal figure coming and going in the office, immaculately dressed and, of course, with her signature sunglasses. Here's more of my conversation with Amy Odell about Anna, the biography. You note that her job at New York Magazine was the job that got her on stable ground after kicking around for a while and being with boyfriends and traveling. But that was the job that was the beginning of her industry stardom. What did she do there that signaled this woman is different from other editors? This is a person to watch.
You know what's so funny about Anna over basically the entire course of her life is that she had a presence in the way that she dressed and the way that she behaved and comported herself. I guess now we would call that personal branding. Mm-hmm. She really had that in a very strong way from a very young age. And that was really evident when she was at New York Magazine. It was a newsroom environment, perhaps in the vein of her father's newsroom at the Evening Standard. You know, it was journalists, not fashion people, not a magazine known for fashion, but known for really excellent journalism. And so she was kind of coming in as this exotic bird, this very well-dressed, the British accent always distinguished her in America. This very well-dressed, exotic British fashion editor there to do photo shoots that most people on the magazine, you know, they had never had anything to do with work like that. But New York Magazine felt that it needed those kinds of pages for advertisers. So it was a pretty powerful position to be in, particularly if it did end up being successful in attracting really valuable fashion advertisers. And Anna went in and she kind of did, she did something that now we take for granted, but I think this is really her influence in fashion magazines, which is she kind of mixed the culture, particularly of New York City, with fashion, and she brought it to life in these fashion shoots. So that could mean, you know, having artists interpret collections and having them create artworks against which she would photograph models, something like that. This, I realize this doesn't really sound very innovative in 2022, but at the time it was really different. And that's not really how fashion magazines really approach what they were doing.
Anna's work ethic could border on obsessive, and that was stayed over the course of her career. You write in the book that she came to work on September 12th, 2001. She came into the office after bruises after having some cosmetic surgery. She was back in the office really quickly after giving birth. And there's one sort of photographer named Alex Chatelain, I think is how you say it, mm-hmm. who claims very dramatically that she destroyed his career over a disagreement about continuing a shoot. She wanted to continue it. He didn't. What was the source of this work ethic, especially given that she came from privilege?
You know, her father and her mother were both described as having very strong work ethic. And I would assume that some of it just came from growing up in that atmosphere. But, you know, I think if you think of like, why does anybody have a work ethic? Mm-hmm. It can be hard to explain, but that's kind of how her family was. And Anna worked hard, but also she didn't pursue academics. Her siblings all pursued academics. Her interest in fashion made her unusual in her family, and she has three living siblings. None of them went into this line of work, you know, not even tangentially. And people speculated that
you know, she was working so, so hard in fashion in this industry that her family saw as really unserious, which is not to say that her parents didn't value it, but her siblings kind of teased her when she was growing up, like, oh, where's Anna? She's at the hairdresser, that sort of thing. You know, people speculated that Anna worked so hard because she wanted to prove that what she was doing was serious, that it was meaningful, even though it wasn't, you know, necessarily an academic career.
My guest is Amy O'Dell. The name of her book is Anna, the biography. It's our choice for full bio. So while she was at New York Magazine, she did see an opportunity to expand her role, and she wanted to take over a very popular part of the magazine. I remember it from when I was kids. It was Best Bets. And she really wanted this under her purview. Why did she want it? And ultimately, why didn't she get it?
So Anna has always been interested, many people say, in expanding her power. If you're a fashion editor at a magazine, how do you expand your power? Well, you look for more things to manage, for more things to put your stamp on. And Best Bets, being a shopping section, was kind of a natural place for her to try to do that, because her fashion pages, it was really more about an editorial fantasy. You know, it was taking a model, dressing her up, taking her out to the Hamptons, photographing her, you know, in a field or on the beach, whatever. Best Bets was like, here are products that you should buy. And Anna simply thought that Best Bets was ugly, and she wanted to take it over. And she lobbied the editor-in-chief in order to do so, but it never ended up happening.
Yeah, I think it's important when we talk about her to talk about her successes as well as the obstacles she ran up against, because it would seem like it's a fairy tale story, but she had her share of difficulties as well.
She had a lot of failure in the beginning of her career. She really did. I mean, from Harper's and Queen, where she couldn't get promoted, to moving to New York, it being rough, getting fired, having her magazine close. And then after New York, things really looked up for her. But, you know, look at media today. It is such a tough business. Mm-hmm. It's not like the industry has improved. We see publications fold regularly. And it's really struck me that that was happening when Anna was coming up in the industry too. She also worked at a publication called Savvy. Briefly, she made very little money. She worked really hard for them too. You know, just really to build her portfolio. But that magazine doesn't exist anymore either.
One thing, she works really hard. We know that. She's got her own personal style. But she, even at New York Magazine, before she became capital A Anna Wintour, she had a sense of, and I don't know if mean is the right word, or dismissiveness, that sometimes things would come into the office and products. And instead of saying, I don't like this, isn't for me, she would call it rubbish or trash. Was there something, what does that reveal about her from your interviewing of people and people who worked for her, people who liked working for her, who didn't, that sense that she was dismissive about certain things?
I think it says a couple of things. One, that she has a very specific standard about what she thinks is great, and she will not deviate from that standard. And we have seen over the course of her career where those instincts have served her, and we've seen instances where those instincts have hurt her. And she's also extremely decisive. She makes a decision, and that's the decision. It's really hard to get her to change her mind if you're in the unusual position of being a person who might be able to change her mind.
And I think a lot of times when people talk about her, I think there's a certain amount of sexism involved, because if you had a man who was decisive like that, they wouldn't be called certain words.
So many people said that in my conversations. If Anna Wintour was a man, she never would have this reputation, you know, for being the Devil Wears Prada. Her, you know, all of her all of her mannerisms and her personality like would not have received this much scrutiny. And I think that that's a really interesting question for people to think about when they read the book. And I also wondered, you know, fashion, Anna worked so hard to prove to her family that fashion was a serious line of work. But fashion is really widely perceived as not so serious. So I also wonder if that kind of plays into it as well.
That was my conversation with Amy O'Dell about her book, Anna, the Biography, our selection for this month's full bio. Tomorrow, Anna Wintour is lured to the publishing giant Condé Nast with a role created especially for her and an orchestrated situation where two women were pitted against one another for control of American Vogue.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.